On the Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground. And hello once again, this is Adrienne Berg, and I am so delighted for this current episode of On the Ground, because here we really are accomplishing what we set out to do. And that is bring someone to you who is a leader in non-governmental organizations, who in fact was a former director of the Global NGO Executive Committee, making his bid for re-election, by the way, and who has on so many arenas and in very tough circumstances really made a difference in the world. And he's here not just to tell you what he has done, but he's here to tell you how he did it. His name, and you may very well know him, his name is Dr. Safai Okoro-Chukwu. And he is somebody who has started so many programs through the Center for Public Health, an organization he started at the University of Nigeria, in Nigeria, as an undergraduate with seven friends, I dare say maybe in a garage. So I like to call him the Bill Gates of NGOs, because he started it from the beginning. So this is a guy with a knack. He has a very special knack, because now the organization is operating in 24 states out of 36 in Nigeria. And in fact, it has consultative status with the Economic and Social Council, ECOSOC, of the United Nations in 2010. So thank you, Dr. Safai, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Adrienne.
All right, so let's start. I'm going to start way back because I'm fascinated by this. So there are nine guys, presumably maybe girls, I don't know, you tell me, in college. And they decide, well, I think I'll just change the world. How does that happen? How did you get them together? How did they get you involved? And what were some of the things you did as a young student?
Yes, as a young student of University of Nigeria, Enugu campus, College of Medicine, we noticed some gaps in the society that were happening, especially when we are doing our accident and emergency posting. You know, emergency posting is where they bring a lot of medical and surgical emergencies, people that had emergencies in the hospital. So by the time they bring these people, their relations and everybody's around, and the medical personnel are interested only in the medical side of the treatment. But the social side, most times somebody that is involved in accident, the clothes are torn, that exposed, especially the women or the men. So some of us as a student found out that this gap needs to be filled. That if the medical personnel are thinking of the medical side of the problem, we should take side of the social side. So we started contributing money, providing clothes, food, and getting to contact the relations of the accident victims. That's how it started.
So let me unpack this. You said villages, contact the villages. Are we talking about rural living here, and you had to go out and get people together, and was there the communication technology that we're used to today?
Yeah, as at that time, we didn't have the benefit of the global GSM mobile phones. We were only using landline. So what we do is that much information we can extract the person, we use the phone to contact, find out the city where their relations are staying, and get somebody to go and contact them that their relations are in the emergency department of the hospital.
So it was really as simple as seeing the social need and just contacting family so people who've had an accident had somebody to be along their side. So it's a beautiful beginning, but it's still a long way from that to creating an organization that's in 24 of the 36 states in a country like Nigeria. And, you know, we're here to find out how it's done. Now, this was way back, what, in 2010? That this all began, and how did it begin? How did creating the center begin?
Yes, it started in 1994.
Way back.
Yes, We started growing and finding more as we progress, we find more gaps in the system, which we are trying to solve because we believe that government cannot solve everything and we have people of like minds who can support us because we are trying to look at the socio-economic determinant factors of health. Find how the government can solve some and the ones that are not being touched, that's where we started filling the positions to spread across the nation, across the continent and across the world.
Now let's take a look at that. You said we contributed some money, and yeah. We often find when we talk to the NGOs that are members of GNEC that fundraising is a problem, one of their major problems, and they're always looking for know-how. So you at the beginning had friends and family. You were the seven or nine of you were putting some money into this, but now you're really starting a center that's going to go practically nationwide. And you say you found like-minded people, meaning some of them willing to be donors. How did you go about that?
Thank you so much. By the time we identify the problems we are trying to solve, we find people who share the same ideas, who are interested, who have the passion, the zeal, the energy to help out. As they are helping out with their time and we believe they contribute their time, they contribute their treasure, their money, and their talents in all these things. So what we'll do is that we have a purposeful drive because the problem most NGOs have in raising funds is that they talk only about the money. Talk to the people what you want to do. Raise the interest of the people on the issue you are trying to solve. All the people identify with you are ready to contribute. I call it the triple T. Time, treasure, and talent.
Aha. Uh-huh. Time, wow, that's wonderful. Time, treasure, talent.
And talent. And you find out that these people are ready to give it to you because it's a thing of joy, a passion. It gives them self-fulfillment. But when you tell somebody, oh, I want to do this, give me $1, give me $2, they are not interested because they are not passionate about it. Find out first the volunteers who are passionate about your cause. It makes fundraising easier.
So what you're really giving them in return for their time, their treasure, which is the money, and their talent, is fulfillment, self-fulfillment. And you're offering that in a very clear way before you ask for the money, so that it becomes almost secondary to give that money, or that time, or that talent. Now, let's talk about collaboration. This is perhaps our seventh or so episode. And the big word that has been used by every single person that I've interviewed is collaboration. And I want to start with the government. Did you need or seek the input of the government or its collaboration? And if you did, how'd you get it? And if you didn't, why did you feel that you did not need it?
Yes, the world is a big ecosystem. All the parts has to play together to work. That we are working in Nigeria and other countries is that you have to get registered with the system, legal system in that country. Is it support? And also, when we are carrying out our program, we have the part the government have to play, the issue of security, the issue of using some of the infrastructure of the government. We have not actually applied to government for funds, but in issue of infrastructure and facilities, they can give the support.
And what did you find the most successful in reaching the government, and what was the biggest challenge or even failure in reaching governmental support in that sense?
Most time, the government bureaucracy takes time to approve some applications because when we started the school programs, we visit schools, we have to apply to the government. That want to visit the schools, want to talk to the students. The protocols and the bureaucratic bottleneck was so cumbersome that it delayed the program and made us not achieve the actual target we wanted to reach.
So actually it's patience that comes into play here as well. That's another skill.
Patience, yes. And resilience.
And resilience, and tenacity. Keep going at it. Don't stop. So we are going to stop. We're going to stop for about a minute. And we're going to go to some news that you can use. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Safine about two programs. One has to do with money, the payers when it comes to health equity and the insurance programs he's putting together. And the other is something that you guys may have been going through because of COVID specifically, almost at any NGO. And that's the importance of vaccinations. Only he is looking at it from the point of view of children. We'll be right back. And now, news you can use. It's the 29th consecutive year of the publication of the NGO Reporter. It's free for you, and the subscribers include leaders associated with the UN Department of Global Communications, the United Nations, and other media. All those interested in the United Nations, all of you NGOs that are members of GNIC should subscribe for free. Just take a look at gnic.ngo and subscribe now. And hello again, this is Adrienne Berg, and we are back for some of that news that you can use. And we're speaking here with Dr. Safine, who is not only a former director of the Global NGO Executive Committee, seeking re-election, clear as a bell, but also he is one of the original founders of the Center for Public Health. Now, this is an organization who started in the University of Nigeria. He started it with friends. He's nurtured it to a national organization. And I think if you've listened to him, you understand that he is a first-class nurturer. And it's one of the things that he's really teaching us exactly how to be and how to do. But throughout his long career, he has created many unique things that one would have said can't work. And yet, there they are. So what is he doing right now? Well, first of all, he is looking to achieve universal health coverage and health equity. And he's established a community-based social health insurance program in many of the communities with really good participation, stakeholders. We talked about the importance of collaboration. So let's go back to that. Dr. Safine, let's take a look at the insurance program. In your vision, what does these insurance programs look like? Are they local? Who are the payers?
Thank you so much. Health insurance program is a beautiful concept that makes sure everybody has an access to healthcare whenever the person needs it. Unfortunately, in the part of our world, in Nigeria, health insurance coverage is only about 5 to 6%. Some projections will say 10%, but in actual fact, it's less than that. The payers is a contributory scheme that will be paid by the locals. It is based on non-profit basis and to make sure they have access to healthcare by contributing as little as $1 per month to have an access to healthcare delivery services.
So there was a real need. There's a real opening. Now, have you approached actual insurance companies? Have you helped locals create insurance companies? Have you made this really difficult problem workable?
Yes, we have approached many companies, many groups, many establishments. In fact, in 2021, through the Global Mayor Challenge, which I used a city in Nigeria, Omaka, Njaba local government, Imo State in Nigeria, we used as a case study when we worked with the Bloomberg Philanthropies of the United States of America. They sponsored the study. When we did the study, initially when we came into the community, there was no health insurance, there was poor health services, 0% health insurance. By the time we enter the community through engagement with important stakeholders, get them involved, traditional rulers, faith-based organizations, youth leaders, women organizations, the acceptability was recorded as high as 89%.
That's huge. That's a huge change. So here's another point, and that is you can floor people with statistics when things are really working. And when you can show something like that, an increase in stability, then, of course, people begin to realize that you have social proof of what's going on. So that's another takeaway from this. I don't want that to get lost. Being able to analyze and create these statistics for social proof, right? But you also have to be able to show that there's going to be a profit, because insurance companies like the one you mentioned, there's profit motive. So are we saying here that people have wanted this locally and you were able to speak directly to the folks that would be insured and get a buy-in and see that they were interested in this?
Thank you so much. By the time we entered the community, we sat down with the beneficiaries, what we call the enrollees.
Uh-huh.
Told them, this is the services you are going to benefit. This is the part you are going to play. Because what matters in the developing country is an issue of trust. People believe they've been exploited over the years. When you mention big companies, they look at it as being exploitative.
Yes.
So we bring the people close. This is what we are going to do. Introducing transparency and make the people the part of management of this insurance program to see how, when I mean that, it's based on non-profit. The marginal profit need to be very, very rational, not exploitative. So that people know, they agree on the amount they want to contribute based on the services they're going to get.
Well, actually, it's a wonderful idea. And what I was saying was that here's another takeaway. You know, there's a sentence that we all use, but we don't really think about it, which is nothing without us, nothing about us without us, nothing about us without us.
Exactly.
What it really means is talk to your constituents. And if you don't get a buy-in from the people that you're interested in helping, who else will buy in? So these are really important takeaways. Now, I want to talk a lot, actually, about something you're taking on. Because for the first time in Nigeria, Dr. Safine is taking on vaccinating a goal of 5,000 boys and girls between 9 to 14 years. I have a lot of questions on this. I'll ask them all at once. Aren't there already vaccines? Question one. What kind of vaccines? How are you getting the parents to get together and allow this to happen? And why did you choose this as a goal at this time?
Thank you so much. I love this question.
Mm-hmm.
Every year, estimated 12,000 women dies in Nigeria from cervical cancer.
Mm.
And by implication, it means that every hour, about 7 women dies from cervical cancer. And cervical cancer, fortunately, is one of the cancers that can be prevented through HPV vaccine. But it is very sad that at this moment, HPV vaccine is not part of the national immunization program in most of the developing countries. And what are we trying to say? Many of the young girls will be exposed to death in the future because of a reason which they are not the cause, because of an omission or negligence on the part of the leaders. We have advocated that HPV vaccine should be part of national immunization program to make sure that within these age groups are vaccinated against before this they become sexually active. But it is not the case. Although some countries have adopted it, it's part of the World Health Organization program to make sure all the nations adopt that HPV vaccine should be part of it and compulsory cervical screening. So when we discovered this gap, we started educating the people about the importance. And happily, many of the parents accepted it. We source it from the pharmaceutical companies. The parents pay because it's not covered by the insurance.
Right.
In fact, most of the insurance plans in Nigeria is not covering HPV vaccine. And it's very expensive for a common man in the street to afford. So what we demonstrated is the importance of HPV vaccine. And luckily, people have started talking about it. Because when you start something, it's like planting a seed. You plant it, you water it, you look at it, you be patient, tenacity, resilience, it grows. We planted the vision, we planted the idea, created the demand. Now people are asking it. Now government is talking about it. And hopefully, in the near future, it will become part of the major government policy to include the national immunization program.
Well, that would be wonderful. And of course, you could teach the world a lot about cervical cancer. On a very personal note, my aunt, who actually brought me up, did die of cervical cancer. And of course, it was a very long time ago. And I immediately took my daughter, and it was covered, right? But I can tell you that in discussing this with friends, they didn't know, it wasn't important, it wasn't in their family. So even where it's readily and freely available, it's an issue. It's an issue that has to be communicated to the parents because these are young people or they won't go in. And, of course, in a place where it has to be paid for, then it becomes almost a luxury item. And that's what we don't want. We don't want life to be a luxury item. Now, when we come back, we're going to continue to talk to Dr. Safwan. And here we have a section, a doctor, that we call words of wisdom. Questions like, if you could tell a young person today who is going into civil society what you would really like them to know, and what you would like them to be concerned about and the challenges they're going to face, what might it be? We'll be right back. And now, news you can use. It's the International Year of Millets. Yes, millets, an important agricultural product for food security, good health, and good taste. Do you have a recipe for millets? Would you like more ways to use millets in your own cooking? Well, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Division will publish winning recipes on millets in the new UN cookbook and its related sites. Check out the Global Chefs Program at www.fao.org/millet. And hello, this is Adrienne Berg, and this is On the Ground. It's the podcast of GNEC, the Global NGO Executive Committee. And what I would like you to do is make sure you tell everyone you know in the world of civil society, NGOs, in government, out of government, fundraisers, donors, that this exists, because it really is your show. And if you contact us, and you'll be able to do that if you go to GNEC, GNEC.NGO, we'd like to make it your show. If you are somebody who is part of an NGO that have something to impart, whether it's words of wisdom, way to do things, challenges you've overcome, that's what this show is all about. So simply let us know. And please do make sure that you go every month, a couple of times, because we will have new recordings, new episodes. We are also on, and please like us and follow us on iTunes, Spotify, Audible, and many others, including Google and so on. So if you're a podcast junkie, make this part of what you consume. All right, now we're going back to a fascinating guy who actually started to make a change in Nigeria when he was in school. He nurtured all of his thoughts about public health and what's important. He's brought it throughout almost the entire country of Nigeria, and as you'll see in a minute, many other countries as well. And the Center for Public Health, which he founded, is registered in New York in the U.S. With 501c3 status in Canada, where he happens to be talking to us right now, in Zambia, one of the countries that I so much admire, Kenya, Rwanda, and the offices will be open there in Rwanda this year. So, Dr. Safwan, I wanted to talk about words of wisdom, but you said, nope, I got more to say about the cervical cancer and the vaccination. So say it. Tell everybody what you're doing.
Yes, actually eliminate cervical cancer in the world. We have started the 10 million vices all over the world. We are now in 26 countries with over 5,000 volunteers, voicing out in uniformly, informing the people about the importance of elimination of cervical cancer. Cervical cancer elimination is a moral and is a fundamental human right of the gay child.
You know, we had a wonderful discussion about a simple disease of children that could be cured for $30 a year and actually cured, have absolutely no effect. And it was the same type of thing. When something is staring you in the face and it is so easy to make that change, then you see the gap, which is a word that Dr. Safine has used several times here. Once you see that gap, you try to make it happen. But there's more to it than that. So let's go on to this issue of wisdom. I have many times over the past almost 50 years talked to people in social services. And you hear words like burnout, disappointment, sometimes even depression. But when I talk to folks like yourself, there's so much energy, there's so much power. The question is, how do you keep it up? You've been keeping this up since 1994. What do you do personally and what do you do professionally to keep that vision and that bright eye going that might help others who are not feeling as sprightly about their missions as you are?
Thank you so much. Issue of vicarious trauma, being burnt out, is always encountered, especially when you have a vision and when you have a dream you want to push through, and yet you have a lot of limitations. So in this issue, I recommend any young person, any person interested in working with any CSO, civil society organization, to brace up, because there's a time, a low time, you feel that what you are working is not working out. It's a downtime, and you feel so depressed. But there's a solution. That's what I call, you should have a self-care plan, safety care plan. Know how to manage your time, break your task into smaller pieces, smaller tasks. Have a measurable time. If you're not meeting up your target, lower your target a bit and take it one by one. Most times in a bit to satisfy or to show that you're an achiever, and when you fail, I don't like to use that word, fail.
Yes.
I figured you wouldn't
like to use the word fail. Yes.
Well, it's not going the way, or the time is not approaching as you want it. You're not meeting your timeline or key performance indicators. Slow down a bit. Go back to the drawing board. Have a rethink. Meet with your team and find out what is not going as planned. You can readjust. Always believe that you must reach your target. You must reach your destination. And this one of the self-care plan is have a lot of time free yourself. Go for vacations. Physical exercises. Have a good sleep. Have a good sleep. Plan your time. Have a time to discuss with your family, a good time with your family. Read good novels. Listen to good stories. Hang out with the people and make sure you still keep your eye on the ball.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Right. Now, you like GNEC. You like the Global NGO Communications Committee. You like to be part of it. You like the United Nations and the NGO Executive Committee. In fact, you're looking for a re-up on your post as director. What have you and have the organizations that you founded gotten out of being part of this?
Being part of GNEC, Global NGO Executive Committee, was a very good breakthrough. I met a lot of fantastic people who had a lot of ideas, who are so welcoming and ready to share a lot of ideas. GNEC, I'm so happy with the people in GNEC today, because it's a place all the leaders of NGOs meet to reconcile some concepts and push our ideas to the world in collaboration with the United Nations. United Nations is a very big platform. They afforded the NGOs and CSOs the opportunities to be part of their program and be part of disseminating the information and taking it to the grassroots. I believe the collaboration between the GNEC and United Nations should continue because it's very, very vital and important. CSOs, civil society organization, is an important link to the people. People listening to the NGOs, non-governmental organization, non-profit, CSO, charity and foundation, much more than they listen to any other government institutions. They believe in them because they live with them. They have more trust in the civil society organization.
You know, this is so inspirational, and it's particularly inspirational for the people listening because by and large, they are all members of GNEC. And it gives me the opportunity to put in my pitch, which is if you are an NGO and you're listening and you haven't applied for certification at GNEC, you should consider it. Because just as Dr. Safine says, the United Nations is a very large organization, not so easy to navigate, but GNEC is. There's an immediate welcome when you become part of this organization. And before we leave, I just want to ask you, Dr. Fine, you have a lot of people listening to this. Some of them are donors, some of them are academics, and many, of course, are in NGOs. What do you need? We call it, of course, in fundraising, the ask, but it isn't necessarily dollars because we know from you that it's time, it's treasure, and it's talent. Right now, to accomplish the very next goal you had, if you could have a magic wand, what would happen?
I will achieve a lot. I will make sure that every girl in Nigeria, in the world, are vaccinated with HPV vaccine. I make sure that we achieve universal health coverage. I need your talent. I need your treasure. And I need your time. Volunteer and be part of Center for Public Health. And be part of any NGO with your constituency, any program you want to be implemented within your constituency, within your area, be part of us, it will be implemented in your area. We need, I say again, for you to go, not to, I'm not asking only for your money, your treasure. I need your time. I need your skill, your talent is very important. Because when you donate the money and not sharing your talent and your time with us, we might not achieve so much. But when we work together, I believe we achieve all we set to achieve.
And having said that, where can we find you? What's the best website or the best way to see what your programs are all about and what's available for us?
Yes, we are at Center for Public Health, centerforpublichealth.org. Center is T-R-E. That's our website. When you get there, you get all the information about us. We're also in Facebook, and we're in LinkedIn, and we are in Instagram and Twitter. So these are areas we can be found.
Well, we cannot thank you, Dr. Safine, for this fantastic and very inspirational and very practical history of how you made it for so many years through so many different programs in such a tough environment and are really changing the world with your acts and your words. Thank you so much for being with us today on the Ground.
Thank you so much.
This is Adrienne Berg saying goodbye for now from On the Ground. See you soon.